Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
We're joined by my friend and colleague, Diana West, a columnist for the Washington Examiner, an author, most recently of a marvelous book, Death of the Grown-Up, a woman who has appeared in, among other places, the new movie by the Glenn Beck Organization entitled Rumors of War 3, star in short of stage and screen, and a woman who has done more thoughtful analysis, reporting, and commentary on a phenomenon that I find profoundly troubling, namely submission to Sharia, specifically submission of our military to this doctrine. And Diana, I came across something you've written just recently about the show trials, I think is a term that's accurate to describe them, that several of our military have been subjected to in seemingly an effort to appease or submit to those who practice this this Sharia doctrine. Tell us about their stories and what prompted you to write about them.
Yes, well, these are the forgotten men of mainly the Iraq War. We are now starting to see a case from Afghanistan that's quite similar, follows the same pattern. Essentially, they are first and foremost the sort of untouchable consequences of winning hearts and minds in the Islamic world, counterinsurgency strategy of the Bush and now Obama administrations. And I say that because these are the men who've been put into these untenable battlefield conditions in Iraq, urban battlefields, chaos, as we all know, having watched the last decade go by. And these are the men who came up against the utter ridiculousness of the policies that tied our men's hands in order to please the local powers that be. And when there was a situation where there was a shooting, a killing that was, you know, in that terrible, awful fog of war gray area that could be prosecuted, these cases were, and they were prosecuted, I believe, demonstrably so in certain cases, with an eye toward, again, appeasing the Iraqi government. And the case I wrote about most recently, former Sergeant Evan Vella, is exactly that case where, in a very difficult situation, his commander ordered him as a sniper to shoot a threat to his group's safety and secrecy of his mission. And at some point, this came out, and it's a very complex legal story, but the bottom line was that out of all of the men involved, Sergeant Vella, who was the one ordered to pull the trigger, was sent to prison for 10 years, a 10-year sentence. And that is the shortest of these sentences. And he is one of the men known as the Leavenworth 10. And essentially, what you learn in watching these cases is that the U.S. government would much rather that these men not have taken these decisions and come home in body bags. There would be no fuss, no muss, no things difficult to explain to the local sheikhs and poobahs, and we would not be in these difficult legal situations.
Yeah. Diana West, you make the contrasting point very powerfully, I think, in this this column of yours at Town Hall, of Marcus Luttrell, a SEAL who wound up being the lone survivor when he and his team made the opposite decision and wound up in the body bags. Give us the backstory there and the contrast.
Yes. Well, the contrast is stark. The two cases are mirror images of each other. In the Marcus Luttrell story, which is quite famous from his book Lone Survivor, the SEAL team was compromised by an unarmed couple of Afghan goat herds, and the men on a mountaintop inserted deep in Taliban territory actually had a conversation in which they compared their fear, their relative fear of being prosecuted in the military justice system back home before killing the goat herds who had essentially compromised their mission and their lives, versus facing whatever sort of Taliban army might come marching down the hill at them once they let the goat herds go. And they actually took a vote that Marcus Luttrell himself writes that he, you know, deeply regrets, because he voted to let the men go. And shortly
after, was the deciding vote.
Yes. Hmm. And shortly after the men left on their way, the SEAL team of four men was vastly outnumbered. I believe it was something like 8 to 10 to 1 by a Taliban group of fighters, and three of Marcus's SEAL teammates were killed, and then an additional 16 special forces who had come to the rescue were shot out of the sky and also died that same day. So we lost 19 of our special forces men, our own American soldiers, in that decision. And Marcus came home alone. And in the Evan Vela case, you had the identical situation. This was an elite sniper group who has been out on patrol for some time in terrible blistering heat in the battle days of the Sunni Triangle. They were compromised, again, by an Iraqi man, an unarmed man, who, incidentally, they found out later was part of a Al-Qaeda-linked tribe. And they tried to subdue the man in their hiding place, but the man would not cooperate. And so there, in this case, the commander decided to set up with headquarters to pretend that the man was actually coming upon them in a menacing way, and he asked for permission to kill. Got permission, ordered Evan to shoot. Problem went away. The men went home. All of our people went home that day. And that's the difference. They went home, and then through some various turns of fate, the incident what came to light, and the battalion commander prosecuted it. And there's just been, just this spring, there has been, through FOIA request, cables released that showed that the same the Iraqi Minister of Human Rights was pressing the United States. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm talking about the wrong case. The Iraqi Minister of Human Rights sat in on the trial, essentially demanding some kind of, I called it a sacrificial lamb, mm-hmm. yeah. in recompense.
And Diane West, just to recap, of course, you have been writing about these kinds of incidents of submission to the counterinsurgency strategies, premium placed on winning hearts and minds, or more directly, as we really try to chronicle in our course, Muslim Brotherhood in America, The Enemy Within, which can be found again, folks, at www.muslimbrotherhoodinamerica.com, submission to Sharia itself. I mean, no ifs, ands, or buts in how people are being... the military personnel, particularly, are being told to comport themselves, what kind of protective gear to wear, what they can eat, and so on. These are the sorts of things that I really think, Diana, you've provided an incalculably important service to us all in highlighting and clarifying and demonstrating the absurdity, not to say the obscenity, of how we are treating those who have put their lives on the line for all of us. Give us a sense where things stand right now. You were writing from the appeals court. Is there any prospect that these men who were, again, serving their country, following what they consider to be legal orders to protect themselves in their mission, are going to be, you know, exculpated in the end, or are they going to wind up having to serve this full and terrible punishment?
Well, so far, there has been absolutely no glimmers of hope in any of these cases. As I was tracking recently, two final appeals at the highest level. The other cases are wending their way in the same direction. They seem to get shot down every which way. Plus, they've been denied clemency, which is actually in some ways worse, because meanwhile, the American government has given clemency or otherwise released thousands and thousands of known terrorists, some quite notorious terrorists,
Duk,
with blood
example.
Of Americans. Yeah. Yes, very recently, yeah. In both Iraq and Afghanistan, after these detainees have served, you know, some 2, 1, 2, 3 years, whatever it is, they've been released just simply on the good word of their local tribe, whereas our people, our men, are sitting there rotting. They have they should at least be given the same deal that the terrorists are being given, and yet they are being ignored.
Amen. Diana West, they're not being ignored because you are their champion, and you are keeping the Klee Guard on them at the Washington Examiner Town Hall and your other outlets. Thank you for doing it. Keep up the great work, and please come back to us again very soon. We're desperately interested in trying to make sure that, as you say, these chaps are not ignored and their plight is remedied.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful, all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Congress doesn't have a budget for 2011, but the GOP has proposed a budget for 2012, and Bill Bennett likes it.
Maybe it helps to have that 2012 in the background, people hearing and seeing Ryan and the Republicans saying they're serious about really cutting the budget.
As a backdrop
to this debate about 2011, people make the decision, well, Republicans seem much more serious about this.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by Supervisory Special Agent Jeffrey Scott. He is with the Drug Enforcement Agency, currently assigned to its Public Affairs Office at the headquarters of the DEA. He's a man we touch base with regularly to take stock of how things are going in what I think of as the drug enforcement part of the war for the free world. And Jeff, it's great to have you back with us. One of the things that we've been tracking is the phenomenon of drug cartels using somewhat sophisticated submergible vessels to try to get around what you and your folks are doing at the border and, for that matter, what the Coast Guard, I guess, is principally responsible for doing at sea. What's the latest in terms of this countermeasure effort and the level of sophistication that you're now seeing in terms of these submersible vessels?
Well, thanks, Frank, for having me on. I mean, we've seen versions of these sorts of semi-submersibles since about the early 90s, but the sophistication level has increased you know, the last 5 or 6 years. Although that's, you know, you're still talking about vessels that are, you know, neither comfortable nor safe. You know, they're built out in the jungles, you know, of Colombia and then launched. And we've seen them anywhere from, you know, 40 to 80 feet long, made out of steel, wood, and fiberglass. You know, they usually have either a single or twin diesel engine. And their ranges vary, nautical ranges vary from, you know, 2,000 to even 5,000 miles. So it's definitely a technique that the Colombians are working to perfect. And it's something they've been aggressive about trying the last few years. And the seizures are dramatic. The footage of it is dramatic. In my time in DEA, it's one of the more interesting smuggling methods that I have seen.
And that time is 17 years of distinguished service, Jeffrey Scott. We're particularly interested in the extent to which this kind of vehicle for covertly moving materials could be used for other purposes as well. We're certainly seeing that on the ground with the you know sort of interfaces between cartels and terrorist organizations, as we've talked about with you in the past. Do you see any evidence that this seaborne capacity is likely to also be used in that respect?
Well, we haven't. I don't have any you know immediate intelligence. However, you know we do feel that these vessels pose a significant national security threat, as you know ID'd, and they are capable of concealing not only the drugs that you see on TV, the seizures of, but weapons, money, people, frankly, anything that you can fit in the hull and that is willing to go into the hull. So as aggressively as the cartels have been working to refine these techniques and refine building these vessels, we've been working just as hard to perfect our ability to detect them and work investigations in our office out of Columbia that, you know, target the building of them, the construction of them that occurs, you know, IDing individuals that can build these sorts of vessels and, you know, conducting investigations that center on their construction and launch.
Right. We're talking again with Supervisory Special Agent Jeffrey Scott of the Drug Enforcement Agency. Is there, I never know quite how you make these kind of calculations in your business, Jeff, but is there any rule of thumb applying to these kinds of vessels that for every one you catch, there's some multiple that you probably are not catching? I know that there's some theoretical formula that's applied to people moving illegal aliens on the ground, but do you have a sense that this is a larger threat than you're currently intercepting, or do you think you've done a pretty good job of nailing all of them that are afloat?
Well, yeah, I mean, you can never prove a negative, so it's difficult to say exactly how many we didn't catch, but just looking at some of the numbers, the graph, if you graph it out, would show that the numbers of that they are attempting are increasing. You know, any one of these vessels could carry, you know, up to, you know, 10 tons of coke. So any one you don't get is significant. But I think the patterns show that they're increasing their attempts at these, and we are also increasing our captures of them. What that says about what we don't get, you know, I don't know, but each one we get is significant, and each one we get, given the amount of time and energy and money they have to put into building them, sets, you know, that cartel back significantly.
Right. Speaking of reverses, what we are, I think, increasingly concerned about, as my earlier question suggested, Agent Jeffrey Scott of the Drug Enforcement Agency, is the possibilities that the kinds of people that you're confronting in connection with drug trafficking are, in fact, increasingly putting their capabilities, their services, if you will, at the disposal of real national security threats, whether they're, you know, terrorist organizations or perhaps even hostile governments. We had testimony recently by a senior Defense Department official by the name of William Westler, who's responsible for counter-narcotics and global threats at the Defense Department, concerning the importance of cooperation between your agencies. How's that going as you see it, and in what areas is it important to make improvements?
Well, I don't know if the testimony was some of what I saw. I actually was at a hearing concerning West African drug trafficking threats. But throughout my career, our association with the Department of Defense has been consistent and outstanding. You know, they are a partner with us at a lot of different levels, and significantly in all of our overseas operations. You know, we do a tremendous amount of mentoring and training to our, you know, foreign national counterparts. You know, they assist with that. And they also provide a tremendous amount of logistical support in terms of, you know, air platforms and things like that, to assist us in our operations overseas. And then, you know, in terms of, we talked about the Colombian subs, in terms of, you know, locating, you know, interdicting and seizing those vessels, we couldn't do that, without the Department of Defense's support. You know, the typical example is the Joint Interagency Task Force, which has a responsibility for detecting and monitoring aerial and maritime traffic. I worked a lot with JIDF when I was out in the field in Haiti, and I know that our offices throughout the, you know, throughout Colombia and throughout the, you know, Dominican Republic and Haiti work closely with JIDF. But we do that everywhere, throughout Central South America, and also in most recently Afghanistan.
This is probably a self-evident question, but how does it work? When you've got, let's say, a potential narco-trafficking sub operating somewhere in waters off the United States, let's say, do you simply put in a call through this joint task force for naval or air assets to be brought to bear to help track it and intercept it, or is this something that you're relying really on the intelligence capabilities and assets of the Defense Department to cue you, and then you work with them to try to make the intercept? I mean, do you give us a sense of how operationally this gets done?
It works both ways, quite frankly. And, you know, as an example for me personally, when I was in the Caribbean, I needed a vessel located and tracked. I had information, I had a case, I had an informant who provided information about a vessel that was leaving Colombia with a significant amount of cocaine hidden inside of it, and I was able to work with the Joint Interagency Task Force out in that area at that time to, you know, based on the information I gave them, to help not only find this vessel, ID it for me, but also help me track it, you know, up to a point where we were able to take it off at sea with a, you know, Coast Guard cutter and a leadette, a law enforcement detachment team, and we got about 1,200 kilos of coke. And again, that was an example of an operation where I had the intelligence, I had the case, and then DOD provided, you know, the assets to help do the actual interdiction part. But there are other instances where, you know, through their tracking and monitoring, they indicate back to us, you know, areas where, you know, vessel tracks, air tracks, that sort of thing are prevalent. And we can begin to, from an investigative side, drill down on those areas.
Well, it's fascinating and tremendously important work, and we really appreciate both what you're doing and you're checking in with us from time to time to report on it. I guess my concern is, especially as the assets of the Defense Department are drawn down as a result of the budget cuts that are now in the offing, that this work will become not only more difficult, but even more important. So we appreciate your explaining it to us, and hope you keep it up and keep coming back to us as well.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, a fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you.
For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit, make a plan, be informed today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined, as it is my delight to say, with some regularity by one of the men I admire most in the United States Congress. He is Representative Louie Gohmert. He represents the 1st District of Texas and has done so since he left the bench where he previously served the people of the state of Texas as, among other things, a justice on the Supreme Court there. And I just can't tell you, Congressman Gohmert, how much I appreciate the leadership that you have been exhibiting on so many different fronts of real relevance to our national security and specifically to the threat posed to us by those who would supplant our Constitution with this this other body of law and doctrine they call Sharia. And I'd like to start by talking a little bit about something I know you...
Well, and let me just interject. I was actually a Court of Appeals Chief Justice.
Correction.
That helps or hurts credibility depending on how much you know about the courts.
It always helps credibility to get your background correct. I'm going from memory. Thank you for that correction. But one of the things that you've been focusing on, I know of late, that's of concern to you properly and to the rest of us, is what's been happening to the Federal Bureau of Investigations, the organization that is responsible for sort of being the front line of our homeland defense in the law enforcement area, at least. What's going on with respect to training within the FBI, and is there not reason for profound concern about it?
Well, there's great reason for concern. the FBI has been under severe fire from radical Islamists, and as well as groups that say they're mainstream, yet they've got the FBI under attack. As you're aware, I think there are over 80 lawsuits or so, probably by the ACLU and CARE, and other groups may join in, where they're demanding more and more of the training material that the FBI uses, different departments use. And they're gathering this information for two reasons. One, they want it all purged of anything referencing Islam. Islamists think that if somebody who is not a Muslim quotes Sharia law, that it's just terrible because you don't understand what you're quoting, you don't understand what you're doing, and you may know better. But I think there may be a provision in Sharia law that forbids Islam to be compared with any other religion, like Christianity or Judaism. So when you have
certainly
training material, yeah, well,
sure.
even if it's just comparing it favorably, just in the best light you can compare different things, still, if you're going to train FBI agents, okay, here's what radical nutcase Christians may believe. Here's what radical Islamists believe. Here's what radicals over on this side, atheists, believe, or Satan was. You've got to be able to compare those and see where, how they think, why they think what they do, so that you can try to figure out where they're going. And I love the example that we got from Patton in the movie, where he's looking down on his tanks have defeated Rommel's tanks, and he says, "Rommel, you glorious fatherless child, I've read your book." And that's how you figure out how to defeat people. You read their book. You read where they're coming from so you can anticipate and prevent them from overtaking you. Unfortunately, the FBI has just, rolled over, and they've been purging material from their training material. ISNA, as you know, was a named co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation trial. I've seen documents of that at ISNA having supported terrorism, and they should have been prosecuted. I understood the Bush administration was going to follow up after the initial convictions, and yet those convictions came November of 2008. Obama administration came in with Holder, and Holder's not about to prosecute anybody for supporting terrorism and like ISNA. Instead, what they've done is they've invited them into their inner sanctum, into the State Department, into the Justice Department, into the White House. So they're bringing these people in who are part of groups that support terrorism, according to the documents filed and the FBI documents. Oh, and one other thing, too, Frank, I have requested the documents that were produced by the Justice Department to the defendants in the Holy Land Foundation trial, because they've said, oh, well, there's nothing there to merit prosecution. Well, their assistant attorney general that tried the case said there sure was. The court in Dallas, the district court judge, said there's plenty here to support their being named as co-conspirators. The Fifth Circuit in New Orleans said, oh, yeah, there's plenty of evidence here to support that they are co-conspirators. And so I just want to see the documents, since the FBI or the Justice Department saying, no, there's nothing really there. Well, of course there's information there. And Holder said, well, I'm not sure we can produce that. And I pointed out to him, you gave it to the defendants who support terrorism, so the terrorists have this stuff. How about letting Congress have it, too? Well, I'm just not sure. We'll have to look into that.
Louis Gohmert is our guest, speaking with characteristic passion and a command of the facts. We're speaking, of course, of the Islamic Society of North America, ISNA, one of the unindicted co-conspirators in the Holy Land Foundation trial, who, as you say, Congressman, has indeed been embraced as a sort of corporate entity and in the person of its president, Mohammed Majid, by agency after agency, including the FBI, which is where we got off on this, which met with him at the director level to satisfy, they thought, the concerns of the so-called Muslim community that these files were being purged of any reference they might find offensive. Do we know, Congressman Louis Gohmert, who was the authority in
purging the files and determining which documents were offensive or not?
Yeah, in fact, there were five subject matter experts, SMEs, who went through, but it's ridiculous to me that they claim those names are classified. I think everybody has a right to know who it is that's gone through and purged our materials. I have been given a copy of the names, but they have classified the five names. I think it's ridiculous. They classified the names, so I can't say who they are, but I'm telling you, there is no reason to be purging some of the stuff that it sounds like they've been purging without even getting into what I've actually seen.
Well, it's really a question not only of it shouldn't be purged, it should be trained. As you said to yourself, Congressman Louis Gohmert, going back to Sun Tzu, it's been clear that if you don't know the nature of your enemy, you can't possibly defeat them. Congressman, we only have about a minute and a half left. It won't do us justice, needless to say, but talk to us about a legislative victory you had last week in the House in connection with the National Defense Authorization Act.
Well, even though CARA is now apparently calling me a traitor, according to some of the stuff they're putting out, I've been concerned, as many people have, with what the authorization use of military force on September 18, 2001 had given in the way of power to the president. As Frank had said, the president authorized to use all necessary and appropriate force against these nations, organizations, or persons he determines planned, authorized, committed, or aided terrorist attacks occurred on September 11th. I mean, basically, it goes on, but the president had all power. He could detain American citizens indefinitely in military custody, and a lot of us have been concerned about that. And so we needed an amendment. I got a promise from Boehner back in December that he would let us bring an amendment to the floor. We've been working on this for months that would prevent the president's ability to detain American citizens. And actually, we ended up saying any persons lawfully in the United States when detained. You have not only writ of habeas corpus rights, you've got federal district court rights. But why I was called a traitor is because I was against the bill that would give terrorists on our soil, foreign terrorists, the right to federal district court trials like Obama and Holder had promised Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And I just don't believe they're entitled to them. When they're foreigners and they're at war with us, they're not entitled to all of the protections that Americans lawfully in America are entitled to. And I get tired of people saying, well, everybody's entitled to Article III court. Frank, Congress isn't even required to create Article III courts, so how could anybody have a right to them? But in our amendment, if you're lawfully in America, you get a federal district court. If you're not, if you're a foreign terrorist in Guantanamo, you get a military tribunal, which is exactly what the Constitution says we're allowed to create under Article 1, Section 8. If you're an American citizen, you've got a federal district court coming.
They may hate your guts, but we love them. And thank you for having them in such abundance and for bringing them to bear on behalf of all of us. We've got to let you go. I appreciate your being with us.
Thank you so much, Frank.
We'll talk with you again very soon.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medications, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY, 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Is Nancy Pelosi looking to a higher power to get a balanced budget? Hugh Hewitt sets her straight.
When I hear you speak about this issue, of course, it's the Gospel of Matthew. When I was hungry, you gave me to eat and listen to the Gospel.
I just got
to
stop here. Nancy Pelosi quoting the Gospel of Matthew, as though that's got anything to do with the government. Let me just tell you, it doesn't.
Can I get an amen?
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are joined, as we have the high privilege of being each week, by Andy McCarthy, our duty expert on lawfare, a man who brings to that subject an extraordinary background in the practice of the law, both in the private sector and, more importantly, perhaps in the public sector. He served as a federal prosecutor, responsible, among other accomplishments, for putting away the blind sheikh in connection with the first World Trade Center attack. And, Andy, by the time we are talking, we will be joining you and honoring the judge who presided over that case, Michael Mukasey, at a dinner in New York City. We're very excited about it and excited at the prospect of you giving an introduction to a man you've worked with so closely in that capacity and subsequently as Attorney General of the United States. I think it's well to start off this segment of the program with a small tribute to a truly great American, and I'm really pleased that you'll be with us to honor him.
Yeah, I sure am, Frank. It's a great privilege, and of all the people I get to talk about in this business, my favorite person to talk about is Judge Mukasey. So it's a great honor, as far as I'm concerned, to be able to not only honor him, but to do it in the setting of the dinner that you have annually in New York, which is just a fabulous event.
Great. Well, we're very pleased that you feel so highly about him, as do we, and it certainly is well deserved in this case that he receives what we call our Freedom Flame Award on this occasion. Andy, you have written recently a couple of important things in National Review Online, where you are, of course, a contributing editor. Talk to us a little bit about Turkey. It's a country that I think most of us don't really
really know very much about, let alone how important it may prove to be in this titanic struggle between those who adhere to Sharia and seek to impose it on the rest of us and, well, and the rest of us. What's going on in Turkey at the moment? And talk about specifically, if you would, American policy towards the Turks.
Yeah, it's interesting, Frank. I think of all the countries that have been the object of our attention in what's called the Arab Spring, the one that has gotten the most attention, obviously, is Egypt. And with the presidential election, the first round of it at least coming up this week, that's only natural. But I think the most important country in that region is Turkey, because in Turkey we see in small compass what the Arab Spring really is. I mean, to the extent that the narrative about the Arab Spring has been this idea that there's an awakening toward democracy, what we see in the Arab Spring, I've contended from the beginning, as have you and a number of our friends, that this is a move toward really toward Sharia rather than anything we'd recognize as democracy. And I point to Turkey because in 2002, the Islamists under Prime Minister Erdogan took over Turkey through a quirk in their election system that was actually designed to keep Islamists out of power. And what they have done over a decade in a very disciplined, incremental, gradual fashion is take a country that was a democracy that had made great strides toward Western values and has turned it into a Sharia state. And what we're now seeing, now that we're 10 years into that program, is Erdogan really take aggressive strides to plant himself very firmly in the Islamist supremacist camp rather than in the West, where Turkey resided for many decades since Ataturk.
Yeah. When we say Arab Spring, of course, we're, of course, mindful that the Turks are not Arabs. But what you're describing is the phenomenon, of course, of really the Muslim Brotherhood at work bringing about this kind of civilization jihad, as they call it, and as you've documented in your marvelous books, Willful Blindness and the Grand Jihad. And I guess the point really is that if the Turks have their way and others in this Islamist camp have their way, the best we can hope for out of these various springtime operations in Egypt and elsewhere is a similar kind of consolidation of power. At the same time, Andy McCarthy, we're being told that the Muslim Brotherhood seems to be losing popularity rather dramatically in Egypt. Do you think that might be that the Egyptians are starting to sense where these guys will take their country, or is it something else at work?
Well, Frank, I think that's an interesting conversation for us to have probably next week, because my recollection is that every time we've come up to a vote in Egypt, the hopefuls in the United States who really want to see this as an Arab Spring project that the Muslim Brotherhood isn't going to do so well and the Islamists aren't going to do so well, and then we get to the day after the election and they've won it in thumping fashion. So let's see what happens this week.
Okay. We will reserve judgment on the standing of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. What we are going to try to, though, explore further is your sort of point in another piece that you've written entitled From Democracy to Sharia, that, in fact, there ain't nothing preordained about people coming to power through the ballot box that ensures that they will adhere to a democratic approach beyond, as has been said, one man, one vote, one time. And in a way, this goes back to what you were just talking about Recep Erdogan in Turkey. He's actually won a succession of votes, I guess, but the point is that incrementally he has moved that country from democracy to something certainly approaching, if not actually at a Sharia state. Is that what you anticipate we'll see more of in Egypt in this coming week and perhaps elsewhere where votes are being taken?
Yeah, I think that's right, Frank. I mean, I think you make a good point about the Turks not being Arabs, and that is actually probably the one thing that has stopped them from unquestionably dominating the region. But I think what Erdogan did in Turkey and is doing is the model for what will happen in Egypt, which is that the bulwark that was supportive of what we would call secular democracy in Egypt was the military. And Erdogan has gone about the process of slowly but steadily undermining it, particularly by using his power over the criminal justice part of the government to go after people in the military who were secular Ataturk types. And now also, after 10 years, being able to appoint his own friendlies into positions of power in the military. So slowly but steadily and markedly, he has been able to degrade Turkey's military to the point where it's really a shell of what it once was and is no longer a guarantor of democracy. I think it'll go much faster in Egypt because they have not been indoctrinated like the Turkish military was in Western secular principles. They've always been rife with Islamists.
Right. And in fact, of course, Islamists sprung from the military to do, among other things, the assassination of Anwar al-Sadat. Andy, in the closing 2 minutes we've got, I just have to draw you out on your evident leadership of the, quote, "to hell with democracy" strain of thought in the American conservative movement, according to Salon Magazine. Tell us what's going on there.
Well, Frank, that's obviously because we haven't had an Arab Spring in the conservative movement, because I'm alleged to be the leader of a cabal that includes not only Michelle Bachmann and John Bolton, but you.
No.
So I imagine if
I'll be in any cabal you have any time, Andy McCarthy.
Well, but if we've been smart enough to have an election, someone else would be running the show. But they've nominated me for that post. And I do think actually what they're trying to do is there definitely is a difference of opinion between people who are in the neoconservative side of our movement and other people in the movement about democracy promotion and specifically what it is we should be promoting and how we should be promoting it. I think we all agree that it would be wonderful if everybody adopted democracy, but I think what we mean by democracy is not Sharia light. What we're talking about is American constitutional republicanism. And, you know, we have to recognize that that's a cultural phenomenon, that it existed in our country for centuries before there was a federal government, a constitution, or even a revolutionary war. And that we can't expect that, you know, by having the kind of a election that they have in the third grade for a president, that an Arab country or a Muslim country is suddenly going to be seized with that culture and become a democracy. It's just not going to happen.
Not going to happen, and especially as we may not get Sharia light, but Sharia heavy end of it. Andy McCarthy, we have to let you go. Thanks so much for joining us, as always. Thanks to the rest of you for joining us as well. Hope you'll do so again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.